You're listening to Talk the Walk, the podcast putting legs on social work in Indigenous communities through story. Living on Gumbunya country in Australia, this is your host, Lucy Van Sandy. I'm very excited to be joined today on Talk the Walk by Janice Luland. Janice is a direct descendant of the Wadi Wadi and Walbunja peoples of the far south coast of New South Wales. Janice's career spans over 30 years, beginning in the statutory context of child protection and out-of-home care, and eventually entering the community sector, working in the areas of justice health, mental health, domestic and family violence, and sexual assault. After graduating with her Masters of Social Work in 2015, it seems as if Janice has come full circle and found herself in a role she was born to do. As a healing counsellor at Waminda in Nowra, New South Wales, Janice brings a cultural healing framework to her therapeutic practice, along with skills in art and narrative therapy. In practical terms, she provides interventions and crisis support to women, children, teens and families who are impacted by sexual abuse, family and domestic violence and interpersonal violence. Janice, thanks for joining me on the podcast Hot Seat today.
Thank you very much.
I was wondering if we could begin our conversation by just sharing a bit about Waminda and I guess how the organisation came to have a dedicated cultural healing service for women affected by violence and sexual assault.
Well, if I'm to be honest, probably Waminda, because it's been around for over 30 years and it probably has come full circle too, because in the very beginning, you know, a small group of dedicated Aboriginal elders and women in the community, you know, raised concerns about the health and well-being of Aboriginal women, and therefore, you know, campaigned very diligently to get this service up and running. And, you know, well over 30 years later, it's just transformed itself into a beautiful model of care for, you know, the strong women, strong community and strong culture. So, you know, it's been a big journey for Waminda. Waminda is essentially a health and well-being service for Aboriginal women and non-Aboriginal women with, you know, Aboriginal families. And the organisation, it's actually just grown into this amazing centre that incorporates, you know, a wealth of services. That includes medical now and clinic, also casework support, cultural immersions. You know, we've got a program called Dead or Deadly, which is a health and well-being, and also that's it's an actual gym with caseworkers, and they do a lot of work supporting women with their goals and their well-being. They have a business, Nulli Tucker, that do their own catering. We have a healing centre that, you know, provide a range of healing supports and activities out at called Balanganya, out at Tolbara. Yeah, we have a Birthing on Country project up and running. There's so much, and particularly in the service that I work with, it's the first time our counselling assistants really sat with New South Wales Health. I mean, it's the first time those two Aboriginal positions have actually now been passed over to an NGO. It's absolutely fantastic.
So one of the things I might do is put a link to the organisation's website, because it really clearly lays out all those services that are offered there. It's an amazing story, and one should definitely go and have a look at that.
Yep, definitely.
Janice, I know one thing that you are really passionate about is ensuring that Aboriginal women who experience violence have the opportunity to debrief or access counselling. Can you shed some light on how this issue's come to be your passion?
Well, I think it was something that when I was working, I suppose, in the child protection area and out-of-home care, women that I was working with, they didn't really either access follow-up or found it really difficult to do that for, you know, for many reasons. Sometimes a waiting list, you know, could be 8 to 12 months. But it was really difficult to sit back and, you know, wait, you know, for a woman to wait 8 months for a follow-up after a serious assault. In the end, they just, you know, wouldn't show up for any of the services. And I think that's one of the main reasons why these positions came into an Aboriginal community agency, because even though they had an Aboriginal psychologist and an Aboriginal counsellor, women were still reluctant to attend the service. What really happens is then when you finally sit down and a woman's able to talk and tell their stories in a safe place, you realise that, you know, this could have been, and they've been carrying it with them for years, that these really safe spaces are available for them. They could have been able to really unpack and talk and get those supports well before the time they turned up to our service.
It sounds like offering a safe place was really the key there. Can you pinpoint what it actually is or what you're doing that creates that safe space for people to be able to disclose and share?
We've thought about that when we come together here, because you know yourself, probably sexual assault, the word itself can be quite, you know, people avoid that word and they might look at, well, they don't want to be stigmatised, and, you know, we've got a sexual assault service at an agency, you know, they're worried about their confidentiality and other things. So we've looked at all those things, and I think even in the naming of the position, so we're actually called healing counsellors. And what we looked at is a different type of approach for women coming in. So we're not forcing them to talk about their trauma straight up. We're providing that safe space, which might come into, that's where our healing centre comes into place. You know, obviously we're setting up that confidentiality and that privacy. We also look at, well, what are some of the values and principles that we want to apply when the women come in? And what we realise is that when we get referrals, we're not just looking at one issue. We're looking at, you know, a multitude of complex trauma. So we need to look at how that impacts on them, not just the actual incident, but how that impacts them on them as an Aboriginal woman in terms of their family, connections to community, their culture, their identity. So we try and look at these Aboriginal healing principles and how we can incorporate that in a lot of the work that we do. If we don't recognise and acknowledge culture and impact of stolen generations, that continuous, I suppose, colonisation, we are in that, we're still in that phase in many ways, that kind of gives us a platform to start.
And could you speak about the physical space that you use to talk with women? Is that important in your engagement? And what does that space look like?
The physical space for us is obviously setting up this counselling space. But we do provide an outreach. So we're happy to take women out on country to sit and talk and connect to nature and talk in that space. We have a wonderful counselling room with Aboriginal art. We've got beautiful tournaments where we can, you know, set that space up where everywhere you kind of look around it, it actually recognises culture and strength and, you know, all those little things that make space safe and obviously an entry point where they can come in where no one, you know, they don't have to worry about whether or not someone's going to see them come in. We have the healing centre. Which is called Balung Healing, and you know that's we have probably three or four places where we can actually provide counselling. You know, whether or not they want to come into our counselling rooms, which are very private, or we can take them out to the healing house. They set it up. It's set in a wonderful place on country. They engage them in lots and lots of art activities. They can have respite if they need it there. And yeah, it's just a really, I suppose, quiet, relaxing. They're incorporating language. They do cultural exchange with them from the desert. We recently run our Singing for Healing program out there. So a lot of our programs are run from out there.
Mm.
That gives ownership to the local community as well, and always acknowledging that is, you know, those programs are held on their country, the country that we're on.
Mm. Janice, I'm interested in exploring a bit more about how you arrived to do social work. How did you find yourself coming to do work in the domestic violence, sexual assault kind of area? Can you trace your thoughts or experiences back to a particular time where you thought, you know, this is where I'm going to end up and this is what I'm going to do?
Yeah, well, it was really interesting, to be honest with you, to end up in this area, because if we're talking about how I ended up in social work, I always worked in the area of domestic violence, sexual assault, supporting Aboriginal women.
I can remember all the literature coming across the board saying that social workers are far more adapt to working this area and their training. And there's a couple of opportunities I wanted to, even though I was doing the work on the ground, there was a few opportunities I missed out on because they required that social work degree. Mm-hmm. And even though I'd already finished a Bachelor of Arts in welfare work, it still wasn't adaptable to the work I wanted to do. So I suppose it's through missed opportunities. It's really through some closed gates, if I could say it that way.
So ending up doing domestic violence, child protection kind of work, can you see that as a young person this was the area that you were kind of being directed in by family or mm. what led you in this direction, do you think?
I was a young mum with a couple of kids, unemployed, no education. I think I was had both my children by the time I was 19, living with my parents. In many ways, my first opportunity for work was with a youth, with an Aboriginal youth group, with a beautiful elder that we used to do some work with youth. And it just so happened I went for a job interview and I landed my first job in services. So when I thought about it, here I was, a young mum, not educated. I was actually the stereotype back then in the 80s, single mum, unemployed. And I really wanted to get in there and help young mums that were in my situation. Back then, we didn't even have juvenile justice. So back then, community services used to deal with the young juvenile matter. And so, yeah, so I thought, no, I want to really help other women to try to let them know there's hope being a single mum. You know, having a lot of negativity forced on me, being a single mum, no education. There was a lot of bigotry and a lot of, you know, not just racism, but now I was copying it, you know, another stereotype. So I just really wanted to, you know, want to change that for myself, and I wanted to help other young women.
It sounds like through your own experience and landing that first job, you were given an opportunity to create something different for yourself, and then you were thinking about helping other people to be able to do the same thing.
Absolutely, and I probably missed a step there because I know that I actually had a, when I was in the refuge, I met another lady in that refuge that needed a nanny, someone to look after a kid. I know, and so I packed my kids up and I went and I was her nanny looking after her four children. She actually had work. When I realised I was just missing community, I came back. Because I was interstate, I came back and I went back to year 12. They were running a TAFE course for Aboriginal people to finish their year 12 certificate. And from there, I went from doing the year 12 to then starting a degree at the university, which was another Aboriginal initiative called AVET program run with the University of Western Sydney. And I think they were TAFE back then. Then they went across to, they were a mill pair of TAFE, and then they sort of morphed into a university in the middle of my studies. So I ended up with a degree from a university. Yeah, but it definitely was education and work that I suppose lifted my hopes and lifted my self-esteem.
I was wondering if we could explore your social work practice framework and in particular how you incorporate cultural practices. Can you describe for us what this looks like?
Go back to what I said before, it's I felt like I was missing out. I didn't have the degree. So there's this real urge to get this, you know, learn all these theoretical frameworks and look at what social workers do and you know, this was going to change my practice. And it was really interesting because when I did start doing my master's in social work, what I realised, it was just so important to keep culture with me at the same time. Because what we were looking at is while we were, you know, learning all this and I was learning all these new skills, culture was always there. Like I always needed to keep that alongside what I do because if I didn't have respect for that and acknowledge the work that I and keep that framework, then the work I do with the women I work with, even though with a social work degree, it's really informed my practice. But I have to actually keep culture alongside that practice.
You know, it was really interesting. When I did my social work, there was very little work that we... I know that, you know, it's a degree that is really heavily based in theoretical frameworks and
literature, and it was really, you know, a different way of thinking. But what I realised through the Closing the Gap, I was quite surprised we didn't actually talk more about Indigenous frameworks and how they would apply to work within that Indigenous model. Some of the work that we do, once we get into our practice, some of our clients are only 60%, you know, in some communities, 70% of our client base, which, you know, an unfortunate statistic. So I was really quite surprised we didn't sort of talk more about that. It was really important for me, even though, you know, we went off and we talked about how the theoretical frameworks and how social justice and all these, you know, feminist perspectives. And I was kind of a bit, you know, this is great and this is wonderful, but I want to talk culture. How this impacts on my community, on the work I do with Aboriginal women. Yes, it gives me the skills I needed to be a social worker and to apply some of these frameworks within my work, but culture and bringing culture into my discussions has never left in any of the work that I've done. And when you look at those three pillars of values that social workers hold, like social justice and dignity, we've been working within those values at another level. They are the values that we've held in culture as well, fighting for human rights in terms of this service, making sure that Aboriginal women are recognised and that we really look at that, taking that a holistic approach to care and try to change some of these statistics of our women, you know, losing their life through preventable diseases and, you know, the stolen generations helping some of the women work through and have a platform to talk and be supported. These are human rights, social justice and dignity. They're built into our model of care. And so it was good to do the social work, the grief, and how that meshed in with that healing framework. Because in the end, yes, I can sit down and I can talk about narrative therapy and I can do the outside witnessing and the remembering and the artwork and telling our stories. But if I don't actually make that relevant to an Aboriginal woman and bring that back to who she is, what her community may look like, what her connections look like, what her kinship system looks like, what her spiritual knowledge and value, her kinship and spirituality and her connection to country, then I don't know whether I would get the type of work done. Does that make sense?
Sure. And, yeah, my feeling is that the narrative approach is probably the closest we could come to what Aboriginal people do naturally through their storytelling and sharing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It sounds to me like there's room for universities to really look at what they teach in the curriculum as well in terms of Indigenous ways of being, knowing and understanding the world.
I totally agree. And last year I had the opportunity to, you know, which was quite interesting, to do some tutoring with the working with Aboriginal children and communities from the social work perspective, you know, which was a 13-week program run at the University of Wollongong.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really, really interesting because, you know, I had an opportunity then to bring that knowledge and information along with two other Aboriginal social work graduates and lecturers, bringing that work in and maintaining, filling, I suppose, their ideas to getting broader. Once they come into their practice, they are going to have to, when they look at their own professional identity, look at how they're going to be able to practice in a culturally safe and sensitive way with the women and the community as well. So that was really challenging in terms of the training. You know, there's a lot of literature to read and a lot of theoretical frameworks, and not many of them actually intersect. But I must say, when I did my master's, I think we did one assignment, an assessment on working with an Aboriginal family. Kind of like, I was grateful, and, you know, I suppose if they would have had a component like the Wollongong University had, it probably would have been a little bit more fulfilling for me. And I found myself during the breaks going down to the university's Aboriginal unit to mm-hmm. talk to the in resident and other people about all sorts of issues. So that was really interesting.
I'm aware that in the organisation you also hold a position on the Aboriginal Elders Committee and Cultural Committee at Wominda, and I'm wondering, what are some of the benefits of having this responsibility within the organisation?
Well, Wominda, I think, is an organisation that probably in the end, I've not known an organisation that actually have this built-in cultural committee. And it was really interesting because when I was asked to come onto the cultural committee, I just thought, oh, okay, so, you know, I'll come over and I'll, you know, we'll sit and listen and we'll probably talk about culture. And it was really quite interesting that, you know, it was a lot more than that. It was really every aspect of what Wominda does in their programs had a cultural impact from this committee. So it's about 13 of us, all made up of Aboriginal workers. And, you know, we actually provide consultation and feedback on the different program and how that, you know, making sure that they're meeting some of the cultural values that we have and that we want to work towards within, you know, within the organisation. There are a lot of role, responsibilities in that role. Now, it's talking about sharing protocols as much as you feel comfortable to do so, and just making sure that language is right, the naming of the programs that we run within the service. But it's also sharing knowledge, sharing language, sharing, you know, different experiences, and again, as comfortable as you feel comfortable to do so. That all impacts then on the service delivery, you know, to our community.
Sure. So what's it like for you having, I guess, two roles within the organisation as a healing counsellor and as someone who's providing that cultural advice to the whole of the organisation?
That is really important because even though we have a coordinator who coordinates, you know, bringing people together, I find the other staff are really respectful and they, you know, like it's me learning from youth, you know, how they feel. It's an Aboriginal young woman and it's me sharing my stories, not just mine, but my mother's and my grandmother's, and respecting that and really respecting that sharing that can occur within that space. And we, you know, I talked earlier about the singing for healing. I might use that as an example of a workshop we run with a cultural committee. You know, we come together and we talk about why is that really important from a cultural perspective? How is that going to really help Aboriginal women that are in, you know, that are getting counselling? How will that impact on their well-being? So it's a really important position because I've been on consultation committees before where it's really quite, this is the case we have, this is the family we have, this is the issue we have, how do we it. So it's again quite clinical, whereas this space is more of a sharing knowledge and expertise, which, you know, we're really respected in that space.
And I was also wondering about how open the committee is into hearing, I guess, from a Western perspective, how, taking your example of the singing for healing, that idea of using movement and sound and voice also has scientific evidence behind it, the healing effects of that from a neurological perspective, somatic perspective as well. So, yeah, how open are the cultural committee into hearing about the science behind what you're also discussing from a cultural perspective?
Well, I think they are aware, you know, of that evidence. You know, I bring that. We have a team of healing counsellors. We are very much aware of that, but the cultural part of it that we bring in the workshop that we did, they're very open to listening to that, but they're also very passionate, looking at from a cultural perspective, song lines and sharing of language in song. Use of clapstick in song and ceremony is a very important aspect of that. So, yes, they are open. You know, we might come with the project brief that says, yes, it has therapeutic sound theoretical model that it impacts on this and these are the benefits. But we want to see also that it will build a strong sense of identity for women that participate in it. That's a part of why they become involved. Having a singing for healing group that uses clapsticks was an absolutely mind-blowing idea because the use of clapsticks in traditional, you know, they can relate to that. they can be and build and really remembering the songs that their grandmothers taught them and how dance and music supports a strong sense of identity.
Mm.
That's the stuff we build in to the theory behind singing and what that might do therapeutically.
I love that as an example of the kind of the blending of two worlds, really, isn't it?
Yes.
The best
yes.
of Western science and knowledge and Indigenous ways of knowing and being, and yep. it's wonderful.
And we have to keep that balance in anything that we do, and that's, we're always mindful of that as we go, that we make sure that we're not just running programs for the sake of running them, but we have this, you know, we go back to the model of care where we have to support the building of strong women, strong community and strong culture. And if they're our values, they need to be embedded in every program that we run. And so it's really exciting and it's wonderful to be an Aboriginal woman coming to a group and sharing that and just gaining from them mm. how that makes them feel, how that, you know, how that builds on their story, on their journey. And, yeah, it was really exciting. It was
lovely.
A really exciting workshop. But unfortunately, we've got to wait for funding. I don't want to go into that, but, I mean, obviously, you know, we try to make sure that we can keep this going and you know, being supported by some funding to keep that going.
Sure. Well, I'm glad you brought that up because my next question was going to be around challenges. So yeah. that funding is obviously one of them. But can you speak, I guess, about, yeah, what have been the most difficult challenges or struggles for you since you've started practicing social work?
To be honest with you, I've landed that dream job I wanted, which was in doing the healing counselling in a model where we can, you know, celebrate culture and explore that and talk about that. I think some of the challenges for me is we're still only one off. So, you know, when I look at how many Aboriginal social workers there are in our area, then I'm not sure how many there is. I'd like to know the stat, but I think it's something 3% Australia-wide. I'm mm-hmm. not sure. I think it's pretty low. And I know myself in terms of Indigenous social workers, I only know three from the South Coast down. So, you know, that's been a bit of a challenge for me in terms of wanting to then talk social work, if I can put it that way, because we come together and, yeah, just, I mean, I'm also lucky that my supervisor is a social worker. But even when we do our operational supervision or we do, say we do something like, and I'll go back to the thing for healing, we want to look at how that went, what the impact was in terms of how did that assist with, you know, their trauma and well-being. And find it really challenging when I can't even talk culture
yep.
in the same framework. So if you know what I mean.
Obviously, yeah. you're able to do that with your supervisor who's sort of working in the same context as you, but it sounds like you would appreciate being able to do that with other social workers in other parts of Australia.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely, other Aboriginal social workers, because I'd be really interested in how they actually incorporate, you know, that foundation of culture within their practice. I went to a conference not so long ago in Melbourne, International Trauma Conference, and there may have been one Aboriginal social worker there who'd done a presentation. I just sat there and hung on every word she said because it was just, you know, mind-blowing, you know, the work that she was doing in her community. And even though I want to hear from other social workers, I just really yearn for that cultural knowledge continuing, you know, and how we can implement that in a social work framework.
Would there be a forum where that could be explored, do you think? I'm aware that there's a Facebook group for Aboriginal social workers.
Yes. I know that, you know, they get together once a year and there is a forum, and I've actually, you know, connected to a few since starting. But, you know, one of the challenges in having a lack of social workers is that we did have a worker who left, and then filling that position was really quite difficult.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a period of time where you don't have any counsellor until you can actually fill that position. Mm-hmm. You know, and I'm really passionate about the position being filled by an Aboriginal woman, you know, which eventually we ended up doing, which was really wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
But it's very difficult to fill positions of social work and I suppose in many ways too, site positions with Aboriginal women.
So what are some of the ways that you work through the lack of support or being able to debrief with other Aboriginal social workers from a cultural perspective? What impact does that have on your work or on you?
Well, I think what's happened, I've been able to be very open with that within my workplace, and, you know, there's a commitment there to get that additional cultural supervision. And so, you know, we explored where we could get that, where we'd still have our supervision, you know, with our manager who just happens to be a social worker. But then we actually linked up with another Aboriginal woman who actually was a social worker and had that additional support. So that's been really our CEO, Faye Warner, and also our HR and my manager really open to that, because, you know, we want to be able to be the best we can in terms of knowledge and sharing cultural information, because that all just comes back to the work we do.
I was thinking about my next question, which was going to be around some of the values and beliefs that you bring to the work. You've already mentioned social justice, human rights and dignity as something that's really central to the organisation as well as yourself. I was wondering if you could speak about whether these values and beliefs are helping you in terms of accessing the supervision and support that you're looking for, or are there some other values or beliefs behind this need to, yeah, overcome this challenge?
Well, I just think that some of the values in terms of why the positions actually come here is really important, and just going back and reminding ourselves why these positions are sitting here. So, you know, that's about access, making sure that we have those safe spaces for women to access the service, because in the end, you know, if women are not accessing our service, then we're going back to the same issues. We have this service that's situated in a non-Indigenous building, you know, a clinical building. But definitely engagement, making sure that that's respectful, and being really open to listening. We talked about this saying, and I think it may have came from a book that I read with Judith Atkinson, was around the stories that women tell have to be respected and honoured, and how we do that. That's really important. Honouring their stories, and so coming up with ways that we can do that constantly is something that I'm really proud of, and the work that we do here at Wominda. The values of respecting that some of these stories are coming from 8-year-olds to 88-year-olds, so that people are actually being open to, you know, accessing our service. So if we can't, you know, make it safe and make it a really positive experience, then, you know, they're not going to want to come back. And being open to talking about culture and how that looks like for women in terms of their self-esteem, in terms of looking at building a hope and or trying to look at where hope might lie in their plan for the future. So there's a lot of values that we have that just sort of kick in, you might say, kick in, because they're the values I, you know, in terms of engagement, I'm really interested in knowing what their values are. You know, I know we talk about looking at strengths, and yes, we are a strength-based service, but if we don't acknowledge and value the women that we're working with and really understanding what they value, you know, I think that's an important start as well.
Sure is.
When I talk to women about, oh, hang on, you know, before we kind of, you know, move into that, I'm really interested in knowing what some of your values are, what you would like me to know about your values. So, you know, that's just a beautiful way of acknowledging them as a, you know, an equal, not just as a client who, you know, has this problem.
As you were speaking, the words close the gap came to my mind, and I know that they are words that the government throws around, but it seemed really obvious to me as you were speaking that the values and principles you're talking about are really about closing this gap and making the service really accessible for Aboriginal women.
Absolutely. And I did read one of the reports on closing the gap, and I know that there was a time when there was a lot of Aboriginal services that were going to be defunded, or, you know, they lost a lot of funding. But what we find, even in the healing counsellors, access to service and outreach are the two main, I suppose, components of what we do that we find help women. We either go out to them in remote community, and a lot of our women don't have transport, or we provide the transport for women to come in. So I think that access to service, if we didn't have transport and we didn't go out into community, that gap would actually widen. Yeah, definitely access and outreach as well.
So a physical, tangible kind of elements are just as important, it sounds like, what we're speaking about, as
the
values and principles that guide our work and how we interact with people, which is just as important to close this gap, isn't it?
Yeah, we're just sort of touching the surface. If I can go back to that horrible stat that says, you know, and I think it's pretty poor for non-Indigenous women too, but for Aboriginal women it's worse. You know, they don't access any sort of supports and services after these events. And I look at, during the short time that we've been here, if you look at, you know, if we've got requests for services from 170 women, that may not look like a big statistic, you know, when once they put them all in the basket and shake them up and they come out with the percentage. But if I think on the ground, I have actually got 170 requests for counselling from Aboriginal women impacted by violence and sexual assault, that is major. If you look at it as opposed to how many Aboriginal women would have went to a mainstream service, I'd be interested to see what that stat looks like.
How long they engage with that service is a whole other thing.
And how long they engage.
Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, we've got some data that says women come in and out of counselling, might come once. That's why engagement's so important. But, you know, some women that we've been counselling for over a year. That is major. You know, they've stayed engaged for 12 months and I think that's incredible.
There's some major life shifts happening there.
Absolutely.
I'm aware of the time and I have a few more questions I'd love to ask you.
Sure.
Tell me about, I guess, some of the particular people or role models perhaps that have influenced you as you were entering into this career.
There's been a number because, you know, I have been in this sort of field for a number of years. But met a lady many years ago when I talked about my first introduction to going into university. But unfortunately, I actually won't say her name because she's since passed on.
Mm.
But she was just a magnificent lady. Again, she was on the couch with her kids, not married, you know, education, you know, all that. And I kind of really identified with her. And here she was, my first real access. And I suppose with an Aboriginal woman who was a senior lecturer for the University of Western Sydney standing in front of me and being a mentor. And I just thought, you know, wow, I was really inspired by her and her story. And there was another lady, you know, that I also met, and she was also a senior lecturer as well. And her name was Pamela Jackson. She still does a lot of work as well and continuing her beautiful work. But just as a young, you know, mum on my first little journey, education and work and the work we do, just seeing those strong Aboriginal women standing there, and I just thought, wow, you know, this is really wonderful, just listening and learning and gaining that knowledge from them. A lot of, you know, other women have really inspired me. And obviously, you know, I have to go back to my own connections with my mum and how I only posted a photo on Facebook the other week and she's in the bean paddock picking beans. You know, I just sort of thought, wow, what our mothers did and what women did to put food on the table and to make ends meet for families and keep us, you know, without her, you know, having to take on a mothering role with my children while I went off to university. I've got to acknowledge the beautiful role models in my family. I suppose when I talk about the role models in my community, one speaks to mind, which is a beautiful lady, and she's also passed on, which was Annabelle McLeod. And I think she was one of the first Aboriginal women in our community to enter into, you know, a government position. And oh, just a wonderful, inspiring woman. And she just had wonderful words of wisdom to talk to me about. But there's been, you know, many Aboriginal women along the way that I, and young women, you know, recently, young woman, I know that she probably won't want me to call her by her nickname, which is Dixie. She'll probably know who she is. But, you know, just young, energetic, those beautiful words, I am change, just passionate about supporting women in terms of keeping families together and sexual assault and domestic violence and just out there powering. Yeah, amazing women. I should say Dixie Crawford. I'll tell her name. I could just go on. There's lots and lots of women that have impacted my life.
It sounds to me like what these women have in common is a vision for education and how that's important for women. Am I right?
Yeah.
Some of these women were up at university and you were seeing them. They'd achieved what they wanted to achieve. And even your mum, who gave you the confidence to go off to university and get an education.
Mm. Absolutely. And, you know, it's amazing what you can achieve in terms of when I look at back then and now, it amazes me sometimes because even though, you know, probably, you know, people say, oh, you should get work where you can earn more money and you should be doing this, you should be doing that. There's a space where I'm really happy and I'm able to do the work that I want to do. And, you know, I know that I'm making a difference just on the ground, and that's okay. Yeah, when I look back at where I've come from, I've met a lot of my goals in life, absolutely. I have to set some more.
How wonderful. So if you can imagine all these women were in our virtual room with us right now, listening to what you've just been saying, what do you think they would tell us about the ways that you've been able to live out your goals and your values and your beliefs in your work? What do you think they would tell us?
In reflecting on that, I read that question when I thought, oh wow, that's probably the one question where I would, you know, I'd like to go and just sit and meditate and just look out into the ocean and just be grateful, you know, for those women, because sometimes we don't get that, you know, we don't get gratitude for the work we do every day. I don't get the pats on the back, great work, but you know what? Someone that really truly knows and inspires you. My mum always knew that. She believed in me, and I think that's kind of the word. They believed in me, that I was able to achieve a lot of the things that I was yearning for. So, yeah, I think that's the one thing that they would say, well, you know what? I really believed you could do that.
Yes.
That's probably what they would say. I really believed you could do that.
How wonderful. Mm. So thinking about the future now, how are you going to be taking these words, we believed in you and we knew you could do that, into the future? What's in store for you?
You know, there's a few things I would like to take that with me and really try to, you know, again, try and look at these alternate ways for healing for our women from a work that we do, and, you know, really challenge myself in some of the ways that we can look at healing and how that might look like for women. I do really also, I probably haven't even mentioned it throughout the podcast, but obviously one of the women that really inspired was an auntie, my auntie Carol, and she was a singer and a songwriter and played the guitar. And I've written some music over the years and recorded some songs, and I'd like to do a little bit more of that and seeing how this element of healing can move forward into song and music and I'd really like to follow that up. So that's one thing.
Sounds gorgeous.
And the other thing, obviously, I want to really build this service up, this healing counsellor service. I want to be able to support other Aboriginal social workers, other Aboriginal people who want to do social work, you know, to support them through that so that they can have the opportunity to do the work, because kind of like 10 years off retirement. I'm lying about my age. Actually, I'm probably about 7 years off retirement.
Some people never retire, do they?
I would really like to inspire, you know, other women to do the work that I'm doing and to continue. It's an area of work where, you know, some women do shy away from, and that's understandable. But, you know, just wanting to say that we really need them, and they can, this is an area of work that can be really rewarding for them. Mm. And it's a service that would really support them to do that work, building those values of strong women, strong community, and strong culture, for sure.
It sounds like Wominda could be a place to grow the next generation of Aboriginal social workers to me.
Absolutely. They do take on social work students. And so, again, you know, just encouraging women to, Aboriginal women to go and do this degree, I think would be, you know, that would just open it up. And I have been able to encourage one lady to do it, and she's just started her master's.
Oh, how wonderful.
Which is great. A lot of us, you know, there's Aboriginal women out there, we already have degrees in terms of, and I'm sure they'd be feeling the same way, you know, whether or not that degree not being a social work degree, you know, impacts on them accessing work that they really want to do.
So just before we finish up, I wonder if you can finish on a good news story, something that you're proud of, a sparkling moment.
I'm not sure whether it's a sparkling moment, but certainly a moment where, you know, again, it's almost like a little moment of clarity where we are doing some activity, you know, it's a singing for healing, where I'm just caught up in this moment. And it was a photo I sent you, you know, and I'm playing the cat. And I'm in this absolute moment, and other Aboriginal women are there with me.
Yeah.
And they're singing and they're crying and they're talking and yarning and they're just connecting with each other. And it's really beautiful. There's no you're the client, I'm the counsellor. It's just a moment where we're together. And, you know, yes, there's all those underlining healing things happening and connection to therapeutic, you know, models of and also Indigenous ways of knowing and being. But it's when that all just forms and comes together and women are just losing themselves in that moment.
Very emotional.
Including me. And that was a moment that I, you know, that I really loved. And I'll cherish that. Because then that'll now take me to look at other ways I can do that, where I can bring women together and to share and yarn and be really proud of their Aboriginal heritage and their connection to community and spirituality. And, yeah, it's just a beautiful way of working.
Well, I appreciate and really value, yeah, the photo that you've sent through to capture that sparkling moment or that beautiful moment with the women. And yeah, thank you for sharing that image, and everyone will be able to see it and place themselves in that moment with you. So thank you for that.
Yeah, thank you too for the opportunity.
That's okay. And is there anything else that you'd like to share that we haven't talked about already?
If people really are interested in knowing more about what we do, they can find us at the website Wominda. We're on Facebook, so yeah, they can
Great.
Just search and have a look at what we do and how we work.
Awesome. So I'll put a link on the show notes to the website and the Facebook page Beautiful. For the organisation. Is there Yep. any way that people could connect with you directly, either online or in person, if they've got some questions or anything they'd like to follow up with you on?
I think email would be great. Yeah, I'd be really open to receiving some feedback, so that would be great.
You never know. There could be some Aboriginal social workers listening that really picked up on what you were talking about in terms of support and supervision around a cultural perspective to social work. So, yeah, maybe they might want to connect with you that way.
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah. Oh, thank you so much. I've just really enjoyed this conversation this morning. The sun is shining behind me and it's a beautiful day, and my heart is shining now just hearing about all the work that you're doing and the organisation is doing for the community of Nowra. It's just beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening to Talk the Walk, the podcast putting legs on social work in Indigenous communities through story, music by Flashback Digital. You can access all the show notes from today's podcast at www.metaphorically-speaking.com.au. I'm currently on the lookout for inspiring interviewees. If you or someone you know is walking the talk in their work or community, then I'd love to hear from you. You can drop me an email at lucy@metaphorically-speaking.com.au or visit my contact page on the Metaphorically Speaking website. Until next time, just keep on walking.